It said recording in progress, Bob.
There we are.
Yeah, we were not able to do Friday's session because of things that come into one's life and has to take precedence.
Have to be dealt with and nothing you can do about it.
There you go. Exactly. Zaki, hope you had a good weekend.
Very, very nice. And we're actually sitting in sunshine weather and had to put on our portable air conditioner. So
it's so unlike Vancouver.
I know.
Well, we have a bit of drought in the air here. But the weekend was interesting, needless to say. And since we last spoke, a lot of impactful news.
Mm-hmm. It sure has been, yeah.
Our American friends are a little divided over a Supreme Court ruling.
Well, and how that particular ruling seems to have spilt over into various other countries where it really shouldn't be an issue. But
yeah,
perhaps I could be wrong.
Well, for those of us who are not in the U.S., this ruling is something you look over the horizon when you're reading the papers. But interestingly enough, not only in this country, but others, there was suddenly a transformation between that Supreme Court ruling that affects Americans that suddenly was to be affecting folks in other sovereign countries. And I'm thinking, well, this is a big leap here.
Isn't it used to be called a quantum leap?
Or a leap in logic or whatever else. But, the impact of a Supreme Court ruling in one sovereign state in any other issue would have nothing to do with the political manifestations of groups.
Yeah,
5,000 kilometers away. I mean, I don't understand. Other than you see a media a frenzy that I suppose likes to produce. Value for its readers or its viewers. If you look at the issue of Elon Musk, for example, not wanting now to buy this Twitter platform because he doesn't want to buy a pig in a poke, I guess, suddenly. So what do you mean there's a large percentage of the subscribers that are phony and actually are not real. So thus the value of this platform you're buying is somewhat diluted. And you know, again, it's the hysteria around that is much like the hysteria that was dreamt up by certain quarters over the Supreme Court. It's the same churn. Oh my God, what are you doing?
And part of that, I think, deals with the issue of if we can focus people's attention on one thing, then they would two things. They're not going to be concerned about what's really going on, or we might have a chance to slip something else through. So,
well, clearly some pundits will say that on a much grander scale, the war in Ukraine is a perfect example of get your attention on something else. Well, in the meantime, the mess that world is finding itself in economically, which was created long before the first Russian invaded Ukraine, is conveniently, you know, look somewhere else. I mean, as we speak, the American president is off to Saudi Arabia to plead for the Saudis to give him more oil. Okay, because those bad Russians have done something to the economic well-being of the world, and particularly the United States. So the pariahs in Saudi apparently are okay to be giving the United States oil. Meanwhile, they, of course, told their Canadian neighbors to the north, we don't need your oil, you know, day after he was elected, or rather took office.
That two or three pipelines that are in the United States are causing us nothing but problems. So we're going to have to shut them down. So
yeah. So, you know, again, you have to, since we are armchair critics, you sit here and you go, this makes no sense. But not a whole lot of stuff makes sense. And certainly in our own little sphere here, one of the things that I was reading about earlier today was the punishment of the Border Patrol agents for the whipping of the Haitian migrants has become a cause celeb, certainly in the law enforcement community, because according to The Hill, which is a newspaper in Washington, the headline is Punishment of Border Patrol Agents is about protecting a president and not migrants. And I'll just read you a little bit about what was in there. It says, President Eisenhower once said that the search for a scapegoat is the easiest of all hunting expeditions. And when it comes to subordinates, that can become a virtual canned hunt for a president. Worse yet, presidents often use other subordinates to pull the trigger. And that's what happened this week when President Biden bagged four Border Patrol agents, one of the most, they call it, cowardly canned hunts in political history. After a year of investigation, the administration announced the agents will be punished, even though investigators found no evidence that they whipped migrants, as President Biden and many other politicians and, quote, pundits insisted. Since the president declared before an investigation had even begun that the agents would have to be punished and had to be found guilty of something. So they were reprimanded for unprofessional conduct, working in an unsafe manner, and derogatory language. Well, and the article goes on to say that this is nothing short of a political witch hunt and a diversion tactic to basically not talk about the mess that the U.S.-Mexican border is in at this moment. And in fact, just last week, the UN declared the U.S.-Mexico border one of the most unsafe border in the world. Now that tells you something.
Well, yeah. I also wonder too now if issues that are coming up. You mentioned the Roe versus Wade. They tried to run the four Border Patrol guys up the flagpole to see who would stand and salute, and it only made it to about half mast before it kind of fell off the radar. So now we've got the RV Wade. We've got all kinds of things that are going on. And I kind of wonder just how much of this is the central government's trying to take our minds off of things and focus it where they want us to be focused, not where we should be focused.
Well, you have to wonder if maybe the overarching authorities of large bureaucracies and governments attached to those bureaucracies have run their course in history. You know, in North America, we have the union of 50 states, 10 provinces and territory, 13 altogether in Canada, provinces and territories, all run by small establishment bureaucracies, one in Washington and one in Ottawa, that don't appear to really understand what happens outside the city limits of those cities. Yeah. And, you know, to suggest that one size fits all in a continent like North America, where you have, three very distinct groups in the terms of Mexico, U.S. and Canada, both politically and economically quite divergent. But then within those three entities, and particularly the U.S. and Canada, you have regions that have not very little in common on a number of levels. You can't say that the flyover country, as the Americans like to call the middle of the U.S., is as much to do with California and the East Coast media and political establishments, where the standard of living in some of these places is questionable.
Yeah.
And then, to suggest, and the same in Canada, where where everyone focuses on the triangle between Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa, and that's the whole country for as far as politicians are concerned, and in the bubble in Ottawa, yet they're quite quick to pontificate about how people should live in far-flung Newfoundland or in Alberta. And people in those parts have basically become estranged from their leadership, mm-hmm. not so much because of the personalities, because that does enter into it, but they're going, these folks don't really represent me or understand my problems day to day.
Yeah. And it seems that the more you dig into this, the more the powers to be want to brand you as something that makes you sound like some kind of ogre, right? I mean,
you're not to question. This is the part that bothers me is, why do we have so many little channels of communication like ours? Because we're not really getting satisfied with the communication we're getting from our central governments through a media which clearly is parroting everything it says or tends to, and they are afraid to question very much because in many cases their financial livelihood depends on it.
So what
happened along the way to the press in both Canada and the United States and other countries as well in the Western world, where they're just aping press releases from the central governments. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you ask them, the most basic questions of your problems in the region you are from, say, 2,000 kilometers away, they can't tell you. They're not interested in that, or at least are aloof. And then, of course, that generates a whole other sequence of questions about, well, who are these people and why are they so detached from us being the regular folks on the ground? They're way up there in their ivory towers, as has been many times used by journalists.
That goes back to the we versus they, right? They always say they do this. Nobody knows who they are.
Yeah, the they is a very strange beast.
And the old joke, right? They, well, we finally found them. I think it was three guys in a rowboat in the middle of a lake of Saskatchewan. Nobody can locate them anymore, but they were there once.
Well, and of course, this, without focusing entirely on North America, you have the same problem in the European sphere, where, of course, they have this dreadful situation in Ukraine, but no one talks about how did this begin. I'm always a little uncomfortable at buying everything that comes down the press release pipeline out of Brussels or Washington or London or NATO about the bad guys. Okay, they're let's face it, this is a there are no angels in the Ukrainian-Russian war, no question. And what bothers me is that a lot of the things they talk about as being the result of the war in Ukraine started in February. This is not exactly true. Our economic situation was already in deep trouble before the first Russian ever set foot in Ukraine. The foolish kind of approaches to the economy, to energy, to global climate change, to whatever, these are all long before this began. And now suddenly to blame the situation in Ukraine, the inflation, the bankruptcies, and so on. This is just convenient, like you say, look for a scapegoat, as Eisenhower is quoted in that article that I read earlier. Here's a bobbly, shiny thing over here. Look at that. Don't look at here. Don't look here, because. But what you also said is that you have to be really careful how you ask those questions, because the power of this very tightly bound group to challenge you on or make up stories just to discredit your question. You haven't even received an answer to your question, but the trick is to discredit you, the questioner. You know, and of course, the history is replete with that type. I mean,
which is also part and parcel of what I have, you know, in my alleged mind, have seen over the last little decade is we want to rewrite history, right? And let's take down statues of John A. McDonald, because although he was the guy who created the country, he was also the author of the Indian Act, and therefore this, and therefore, and Christopher Columbus, like, you know, if he hadn't come over here, then there wouldn't be any problems. You can only rewrite history so many times, but what's the old adage? If you don't study your history, you're bound to repeat it.
Well,
which is worse?
Well, I, you know, in repeating history, a lot of empires have come and gone. History books are full of those. And I'm beginning to wonder at these nascent secessionist movements in North America. You know, we've seen Quebec from as long as I can remember, always talking about sovereignist approach to Canada. Whether they want to stay or go, this is a perennial issue with Quebec, and for all intents and purposes, many will tell you that Quebec is already an independent country, you know, within another independent country. But when you see movements in Texas, when you see secessionist movements in Alberta or Western Canada, when you look at sort of these are organic in nature. They don't, this is, you know, the folks in those jurisdictions aren't wild-eyed sort of revolutionaries. These are by and large folks who are finding that the very thing we're kind of talking about in our weekly armchair thing is really pressing them. And once politicians and intellectuals and the media get on that, I don't know how the folks living in the bubbles of Washington and Ottawa are going to be able to cope with that movement.
And coupled with that, this isn't something that just grew overnight. It's been in the press almost overnight, but it's like anything. You have to plant a seed somewhere, and it takes a while for that to germinate, and it takes the germination time to grow and for the plant itself to get above the soil level. So there's a lot going on, and maybe it's just the catalyst of a perfect storm where everything's kind of coming together and all this stuff is boiling and churning. And
well, I don't think they're connecting the dots. There's the common language of the people who question this. They talk about the elites, you know, up there. You call them what you like, elites ignorant leadership, ignorant in the sense that they don't really know what's going on at the grassroots level, because they're quite comfortable where they are. But you know, one of the recent historical changes was how the UK, after, you know, a period of time, decided they didn't want to be part of the European Union. How did that all begin? It began with people starting to ask questions about the, I can't think of a better word, the elitism of the bureaucratic political establishment in Brussels that basically wasn't listening to what they were complaining about. And it was not a revolution. It was a really slow process. You know, it was a slow process for the UK to get into the EU. And it was just a slow process to get out, because they finally, at the end of the buffet, they said, "Nah, I don't like this," you know? And so you look at that, and you look at other things that have happened evolutionarily, such as the expansion of NATO into areas where we're going, what, you know, why are these guys now from the Balkans to the Baltic, you know, pressing up against Russia. Like, what's the game here? You know, you can see what the game was with Brexit. We want out of this. But I don't see, for example, what is the end game for, you know, constantly challenging the Russians, but not wanting to talk about how did we get here? You know, and then basically they've undermined the Western democracies who were well-intentioned with spreading, you know, the new world order or the rules-based system. But they forgot that the folks that they were sending this to in the Southern Hemisphere really aren't interested, you know, because what they have much more intensive issues like feeding themselves, making, you know, the drought, the climate change impacts, and so on. You know, the growth of China, India, Brazil, as a first of this bunch, along with now Argentina, other countries, you know, you kind of, again, sitting in our armchairs going, in the meantime, these folks have not, in Africa, could care less about Ukraine's problems.
The food.
That's right. So they look at the establishment in running the show out of Brussels, London, Washington, and basically that the Western democracy, so-called, which, by the way, are happily blocking and locking up people they don't agree with. So let's not forget, you know, we have our own political prisoners, but we don't talk about that. And again, careful.
Some of this might be the leadership that we've got in Western Europe, North America. The boogeyman always was Russia since the Second World War. But there are so many more boogeymen out there now that we don't focus on. I mean, is there issues that we should be looking at with China? Is there issues that we should be looking at out of South America? We just don't seem to want to change the focus. Is it because we're comfortable having Russia as the bad guy and everybody buys into that? I don't know.
Well, I think the telltale story on that is, well, very recent media history, while the G7 was on, that's all we heard about, all the great things the G7 was doing with respect to the Ukraine. And then there was a NATO meeting, all the great thing that NATO was doing with respect to Ukraine. Then comes the G20, and there's practically no reporting on it whatsoever. Why is that? Well, because, you know, the seven already have kind of expended their ammunition on the media while they had their meetings. And when it got to the G20, there were 13 others over there. They're going, well, maybe we don't agree. And they didn't want to get into that discussion. And plus, Russia was there. And it's like saying, well, I'm not. And of course, yeah, they said, I'm not going to talk to those guys. Well, okay, but they're there in the room. But you can't ignore China. You can't ignore Russia. You can't ignore the Southern Hemisphere, okay? Because those people, Southern Hemisphere, way outnumbers the folks in Europe and Canada, the U.S., and Australia. If you throw them in there, you know, you better come to grips with the fact that, you know, everything they do is not wrong and everything we do is not necessarily right. So when you combine that with our general sort of discussion within the border pool community about how do we manage migration and where do people want to go, I'm still astounded that anybody want to come to parts of the world where things are so screwed up, you know. So
Yeah. It is amazing. And I don't understand that either. But is this still considered the Holy Grail? Is this the yellow brick road of Oz? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, the folks in Mexico were lined up at the border seem to think so. I mean, and they're not now. The majority of those people are obviously from Central and South America, but there's a pretty good smattering of folks who are just passing through there. And the United States has basically had to absorb well over 1 million undocumented migrants in the last year. That's a significant impact on the economy of that country, whether or not the powers to be want to deal with it or not. I find it astounding that as a casual observer, the president of the United States hasn't even been to the southern border. You know, to at least give some sort of support to the authorities that he pays to manage that border. That again, that's one of those things that makes no sense to me.
Yeah,
it makes no sense to me that you have the Europeans who go on and on about trafficking, of Middle East and African migrants into Europe, but they don't have a particularly robust way of tackling them. You know.
Yeah.
It's quite astounding, and you know, the recent sort of outlines here of our sort of weekly roundup of stuff that is connected to trafficking. For example, the headlines are: the flow of Ukrainians into the EU is back at pre-war levels. So, you know, clearly there's a migration movement out of Ukraine again. Italy smashes smuggling network. It was offering luxury services to migrants. Okay. NGO activists, so-called, are rescuing hundreds of migrants on the Mediterranean. They're not rescuing anybody. They're part of the smuggling activity.
It sounds a lot better on the press-wise, though. They're talking about humanitarian things rather than looking at the core issue of this is just a criminal activity. Because if you say it's a criminal activity, you might actually have to do something about it. But
well, it's some other very interesting, and statistics are easy to sort of read off. But I mean, you have 33,000 migrants detained in Turkey just last month. Mm-hmm. Detained. So they're passing into and through Turkey. And then you've got, 2,000 migrants head north from Mexico, already in another new train from central Mexico. And then there's the canary in the coal mine right now, globally speaking, is Sri Lanka. Yeah. Sri Lanka is an example of, man, you watch a country implode into complete chaos. And of course,
it's definitely gone beyond dire straits.
That's right. And at the G20, the American Secretary of State was accusing the Russians of the Sri Lankan problem, which is, again, going back to Eisenhower's find a scapegoat, please. What do the Russians have to do with Sri Lanka? I mean, you know, the Sri Lanka is failing for any number of reasons, which anybody who wants to can simply go on the internet and read them all. But, mm-hmm. you know, starting with the COVID, which destroyed the tourist economy, to its weak infrastructure, its somewhat corrupt class that ran the place. It all, you know, all came together. Mm-hmm. And you see tens of thousands of people storming the prime minister and his residence and basically chasing the rascals out of town. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's and to suggest that the Russians were there is okay. That's absurd. But as I say, the situation is dire in Sri Lanka, and that is going to be a big humanitarian movement for sure.
Very near, yeah.
Not to mention the impending famine that is going to strike those countries that relied heavily on grain exports from both the Ukraine and Russia. That's mm-hmm. a humanitarian catastrophe that, you know, it's going to be a very tough fall, I think. I read also yesterday that in Germany, they decided that one of the ways to combat the problem with lack of fuel is that in the winter, houses will only be heated to 17 degrees Celsius because, we have to save energy. And they're talking about turning off street lights and traffic lights at night to see. I'm not sure how much traffic lights consume in power.
Yeah, wow.
Perhaps all the EVs they want to plug in, that's going to be a problem when there's no There's no juice.
Apparently that's the case in California, where the governor sent out the message that, you know, try not to plug your car in during peak hours because you're causing brownouts.
Really? Well, if the infrastructure is not there.
I guess we kind of have to sit back and think that the world is changing. It wasn't back in the early 1900s where the balance between an electric car and a fossil fuel car was 50-50, and somewhere along the line, the fossil fuel cars won out.
Yeah, but the argument is you didn't know how bad that was for the environment. Making the energy to run the internal combustion engine, but of course they don't talk about how does the energy go into the batteries, because you'd have to wallpaper the entire planet with solar panels in order to generate the kind of reliable, you know, we haven't got that technology yet. And you know, to digress for a second, I have no problem with coming up with greener energy sources and whatever. No. But it's that, again, should be an evolutionary process and not a revolutionary process driven by ideologues, many of whom are getting quite rich, thank you very much, on the process.
Well, I guess, too, just on that same thought, we're taxed to death on green, right? We've got a carbon tax here in BC, have had for quite a few years. Rather than putting that tax money into general revenue to spend on other spurious, stupid projects, why isn't that in a separate line object that would allow study of tidal power, of wave power, of better utilization of hydroelectricity or wind, solar, development of better batteries or less harmful ways of getting rid of our carbon waste? Like, why isn't that money being earmarked for that? You know, anyway, probably well outside the establishments of border issues, but.
No, but there, you know, I can link some dots here. If you're going to dig a giant hole in Central Africa to make batteries, which are toxic when they're done, in your useful life, plus all the toxicity that occurs around that enormous hole in Central Africa where this stuff is mined out, the environmental impact on people as they move the heck out of there. Okay, So there is a direct link between the development of electric vehicle, the whole climate change scenario. And you know how they're coping, or rather how it impacts on the communities that are close to where these things are created. So you know, it's remarkable how little discussion is made in the media or within scientific circles that is actually picked up by media. Is okay, what do you do with all this stuff when it's no longer viable as an energy source in your car? Apparently, it's not recyclable, which means you must dig another giant hole somewhere to put all this stuff, which is toxic. But, you know, we're not talking about that. You know, I'm again, if someone or some group that is representing the industry would come up with a reasonable scientific explanation as to how this is done, great. But we ignore it. You know, we just don't want to look at that. You know, don't look over at that. Stay away from there. Let's not talk about it. It's the same as the trafficking issue with people, with the smugglers and the syndicates. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of money and lots of talk about, oh, how terrible the trafficking in human beings is, blah, 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 blah. And then if you ask, okay, but how many of these guys go to jail or are involved? And everybody's eyes glaze over. Apparently, we don't have any records that are really tangible about how the billions of dollars are spent through law enforcement to deal with the criminal syndicates. So where are these crooks end up? Why aren't they in the Crowbar Hotel? No, we got we talk about the infrastructure, the bureaucracies, and whatever they're built to deal with the problem at the victim end, but we don't want to really talk about who's making the dough on this and how successful we've been at spending billions to put them out of business. Apparently not very successful. You know, it's like the same one, you know, remember the war on drugs, how phony that was.
Yeah.
That's a war that was
still going
declared
on,
but never won, you know?
Yeah. Still going on. Yeah.
Anyway, I think that that is good for a Monday afternoon's armchair visit. Listen, let's talk next week. Let's focus on what our plans are in Border Poll for our forum in the fall.
That would be a good thing. Yeah. It's just here we are already into July and, well, it's August and then September. And
yeah, and usually we're on the way at the end of the fall or early winter. So we'd like to, for our readers, listeners, viewers, send us some ideas on how you would like to see us proceed on the forum. Some patrons would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some sponsors. You know, it was exactly 10 years ago in June that the last of the International Border Police Conference took place, which we were well engaged with. As you know, we were the administrators of that at the end. But you know, it's that's history, and the world has changed a whole lot since then. But I clearly those topics are still worth
a little bit of press time. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Interestingly, I got a note from one of our Border Poll friends in Hungary, where the government, I think I told you a couple of weeks ago, that they were looking at reestablishing a border police,
yeah,
or border guards or what have you. But in actual fact, they're going to do a border patrol. Now they've decided it's going to be within the police service special unit, but 4,000 individuals. Will be the strength will be about 4,000 officers, because they can't cope with the migration pressures coming up from the south and in the east, because it's not a policing function, as you know, in the sense of catching speeders. There's much mm-hmm. more involved, and one of the things that's happening in Hungary is the viciousness with which the traffickers are now promoting their trade. So they're shooting at people. There's actually firefights now. And I guess the regular gendarmerie is saying, hey, listen, this is not what we got signed up for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My job is either checking out traffic tickets or speeders on the highway or doing city policing. I'm not here to be going to war against well-armed traffickers. Yeah. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. Well, maybe we get to talk to someone from Hungary on how that is.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Yeah. Yeah. I know what's going on there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap this one up and get back. What do you say, next Monday?
If not before.
Well, we usually say Fridays, but
there might be some world crisis that needs.
Well, you're right. You never know. We still have to get in touch with the chap who's just joined our outfit about the trafficking situation globally to give us a rundown on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, I'll see you soon, Bob, and to our viewers.
Yes. We look forward to some input from the viewers.
Absolutely.
That would be great.
Yeah. Take care.
See you soon.